This is Pop and Crap, episode 55.
I can't drive.
Welcome to episode 55 of Pop and Crap. I'm Paul French, and having suffered through a sushi mishap already tonight, I think I'm good to go.
Wasabi, kids, it is not for the faint of heart.
No.
That is why I do not partake. We have a running gag in this house when it comes to things that are spicy, and that gag is, what's in this, tomato?
So, not ketchup.
I am not your guy to go to on the spicy front.
That's awesome.
Much to my wife's delight and amusement. You put pepper in this? Honey, you trying to kill me?
Yeah. See, I used to have that thing with Jan where the rule was always I would think of how many hot peppers I wanted in something and then cut it in half. And that would be acceptable. Then she had children, and it completely changed everything. And so...
So what you're saying is I just need to get knocked up, and then all my problems are over?
Well, no, it gets even worse. You're already in the knocked up state.
Oh, maybe that's the problem. Maybe I'm with child, and I don't even know it.
That's clearly what it is.
What a wondrous time that has... And lo, they did see unto them shepherds in the field who said, let us go and see the miracle that is in Toronto.
Exactly. And so you see, folks, we are finding the science here on Pop and Crap.
Well, I got to go sleep in the garage tonight, apparently. Not good. My dog does not like it when I put him in a sheep costume. There are going to be problems and consequences.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything is wrong with all of this.
Pretty much. Hi, kids. Welcome to Pop and Crap.
Hey.
Your good buddy Paul and I are here to discuss all kinds of things about the world of pop culture that amuse us or confuse us or generally occur in our orbit and we feel are worth commenting on.
Exactly.
I'm always trying to come up with a new way to sum this up.
Well, that's a good one right there.
Oh, thank you.
They're
all drafts.
Speaking of drafts, I have not had a chance to update, but I will be doing that for next week, and we'll have an update. And
I look forward to that.
Yes.
Because I think there's only a couple of episodes left of A Million Little Things, isn't there, for this season? I thought I saw two episodes left or something.
I believe that's true. I think they had
it's going to hurt me.
13 or 17? I don't know.
I feel like that's going off the air, and Whiskey... Cavalier is coming on in its place. Like, I think I picked two shows that are in the same damn time slot.
I don't know.
Anyway, this could be a conversation for next week. But
I'm not sure about that because I thought I thought that was going to be the case too. But then it's something else to follow up Grey's, and that surprised me. Hmm.
Oh, yeah. There's a lawyer show, We the People.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
To the Thursday night.
That's right.
Is that currently where A Million Little Things is hiding?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I did not realize that.
That's why they had that little ratings bump a few weeks back.
Oh, that's right. They moved over.
Because they got the Plum time slot. Yeah.
They didn't start there. They moved there.
That's right. That's right. They were a Monday show before that.
Ah.
So there we go. So yeah, I think they've
always
just got
been a PBR show for me. So
well, me too. But
in my confusion.
That said, I usually do watch it. Kind of, you know, I think I let the first few pile up and then got caught up. But once I did, it's pretty much okay. Million Little Things is on, and we're watching that first. yeah. So. You know, and hey, it's going great. Are you caught up?
I am now.
Okay.
And I saw the episode where they said his last name.
That's went, right.
Oh, and hey, this was a trivia question.
They made such a big deal about it that because Murray and I had been joking about how I couldn't even remember his first name. We were talking about it.
I can't name any of these characters by their first name.
And this is my measure of a show, is if I can't name the character, it's a shitty character because it's not sticking in my head. And so
is your position this is a good show with bad characters?
It's a good show with a bad character, yeah.
You know the other's names, just not his?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay.
And I even knew his kid's name. Because his kid's better than him. And so, yeah, I couldn't even remember his first name when Murray and I were talking. So I thought it would be kind of funny to get him with a question about the last name. And I was assuming that he hadn't seen the episode yet. And then he mentioned that he had. And I thought, oh, no, I'm screwed. So, 18 episodes and, 17 episodes for this season. So there are still three more. So it wraps up, February 28th.
Hmm.
And, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rookie's back. I think in fact, an episode is going to be recording as we record this. So I know what I'm doing after we wrap.
I'm a little behind. I cannot tell a lie. I haven't really caught up since the break, I don't think. So I got three or four to go.
There you go. but you know what? No, because a few of those are reruns.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So you should.
I do know that there's two or three in the queue, and I assume they were new. But anyway,
I think there's only been a couple since the holiday break. So I think you're all right. It will not take you long to get all caught up on all that kind of stuff.
Dig my way out.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see here. We got stuff we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
We got a top five that we're going to do.
We are. This is, we looked at the calendar and on the date that this episode drops, it would have been, Mr. Alan Rickman's 73rd birthday. We lost him in 2016. He was born on February 21st, 1946. So he would be 73 on February 21st.
Yeah.
And we thought, what better way to celebrate the man, the legend, than to argue over some of his best movies, in our humble opinion.
I don't know about his best movies, his best roles.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's an interesting dividing line, too.
Oh, it's important. Mm-hmm. It's an important dividing line. Yeah. because even when he was in a movie that was, he was always magnetic in it. And so it's why I think a lot of mine are safe.
Ah.
A lot of mine are safe.
I think one of my usual guiding stars is, here are a bunch of Alan Rickman's movies. Which one would you like to watch right now?
there you go. Yeah. That's a good way to go.
That's my my way of narrating my or navigating my way through the woods.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, hang on. Let's lay a little background here.
Sure.
For those who aren't as familiar with the legend, and believe it or not, Will might be one of those people.
It's possible.
I could be wrong.
Between Will and Randy, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, Randy might be like, oh, so it's all about Will now.
we can't afford to alienate half our listeners.
Exactly. as you'd mentioned, born 21st February 1946. Trained at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London, was a member of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Had also played in productions of things like Dangerous Liaisons or Les Liaisons Dangereuses. And actually, he was nominated for a Tony Award for his role in that when the production moved to Broadway. First, I won't get into what his movie roles were.
Please don't. I feel like it really steals a lot of my thunder over the next hour.
I'm going to list them all. Anyway, he was born in Hammersmith, London, and
explain the accent.
It would indeed. And that's interesting. But I don't know the details of that, so I'm going to leave that alone. Anyway, ton of stuff this guy was in, always had, you know, really great sense of humor with his roles as well, and that's why you saw him in such a wide range of movies. And that was a huge loss for sure, because he was someone everyone loved a Rickman role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was something that they loved, whether it be
the Mad Libs of podcasts.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, I realize that I can't get into too much depth without giving anything away. So
we can just dive in and hit them as we go.
But we can just go.
That there's a diverse collection out there.
Indeed. So we'll just get into the Severus Snape Memorial Metatronic list, and away we go.
Does that take them all out of the run?
I only did two.
Fair enough.
yeah. No, you're like, yeah, but I mean Goblet of Fire Rickman.
Oh, okay. That one.
Yeah. No, all the Snapes off the
Well, that helps.
Yeah.
Well then, Mr. Potter, would you like to have that other British guy in your phone flip a coin for us?
How about you go first?
Oh, you sweet, sweet man.
Since I just screwed you over.
Actually, help me out, because I haven't seen enough of those to know which one I prefer, and thus it was just kind of this big gray blob that I was navigating around, so that makes me quite happy. I'm going back all the way back to the beginning, and when I say all the way back to the beginning, I mean the beginning for me, because there is one place where I learned who Alan Rickman was, and that was a little movie from 1988 called Die Hard.
Yes. And
Mr. Hans Gruber, we can put a pin in the whole it's a Christmas movie argument, but there is no arguing that this movie changed the shape of the modern action film. It was a 2.0 leap coming out of the Schwarzeneggers and Stallones to get they played him as an average man who ended up in the wrong place at the wrong time and was thrust into a situation that he was barely ready for. And he seemed like he was struggling through that whole thing, as opposed to everything else I'd seen in my childhood, which was Stallone and Schwarzenegger wandering through every scene. Like superheroes,
mm-hmm.
completely untouchable and never damaged, never catching so much as a dirty look, let alone shrapnel. And along comes Bruce Willis, who gets his feet all ripped up and gets blown to bits and just gets progressively dirtier and dirtier through the movie. And this was great. And the only reason that worked was because of the quality of the villain that he was up against, and that the gravitas that Rickman brought to the role of the villain, and how much he was able to take a story and a character like that and really elevate it. He was great. I mean, damn near every line he has is quotable.
Absolutely. His first American film. That was his.
His first?
It was, yeah.
The whole Mr. Cowboy thing, where he keeps misquoting different American pop culture references of the cowboy genre. When Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept for there were no more worlds to conquer. Like, that's a random one to drop in the middle of an action flick. And that really great line early on where he says, "Who said we were terrorists?" And the whole story kind of turns in that moment. And that was so great.
Yeah.
And the way he did the European accent, and then he did he did his American accent halfway through it. And
yes.
There was so much in that. And it's one of those movies you can go back to again and again and again. And it's, you know, 40 years later, that movie. Yeah. No, 40? 40.
30. And 30.
30. Thank
Good
you, Jesus.
Lord.
Boy, the math hurts suddenly. That's why I stopped dead. That didn't sound right. But yeah, 30 years later, you can still go back and watch that movie. And it's funny and it's entertaining and it's great. And that, to me, is my first stop every time for Alan Rickman.
Yeah, and that's the scene that you talk about where he puts on the American accent when he's talking to Willis. That was mm-hmm. the first scene that he shot. That was his first day of shooting. Basically, he walked onto the set, and that's what they were doing. And pretty pivotal scene.
What a weird place to start.
Right? Yeah.
Some people might have waited a little longer just to give the actors a chance to figure out which way was up, but all right.
Yeah, but I guess a great way of the I don't really know who you are kind of thing.
That's true. You can leverage on that, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that anyone ever sort of said what that was about, but
they may not have put that much thought into it.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
It may have just been, we have to shoot all these scenes before we blow up the Fox building.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be an interesting way to do that, because, like you say, you do get the people sizing each other up, but
yeah.
And within the film, you expect at that point that, you know, one of them knows the other one. So
yes, exactly.
There'd
exactly.
be more sizing. Cool movie. Sparked a franchise. Gotta love the original. Hats off to Rickman for his Hans Gruber.
Absolutely. The best villain of all of them, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, mine actually came, a year later. My first one is he played the assistant to Kevin Kline in The January Man.
Ah.
And so this is basically, just to give a quick rundown.
Yes, please.
Kevin Kline plays a disgraced former cop. And his brother is, basically kind of got screwed over. And it seems likely it might have been his brother that did it. His brother's played by Harvey Keitel. And, you know, has married Kline's ex-girlfriend, the whole bit. It's just, you know, like...
Yikes.
Yeah. But there's a serial killer in town, and the mayor, who is played by Rod Steiger, the cast is amazing. Best known on the waterfront and also in The Heat of the Night. He played the role that Carol O'Connor would later play on the TV version. And so he plays the mayor, and he's like, I want this guy. Bring him back. He's got to do it. And whatever he wants, you give him. So they bring him in. And I guess Keitel is a captain, and the chief is Danny Aiello. Yeah, that's it. And Aiello's not happy about this one damn bit. But, you know, he knows that, hey, the mayor has said this is what has to happen. It's what has to happen. We got to give him whatever he needs. And one of the things he demands is, first off, he decides he's not going to take the office that they offer him. He's going to choose a different one. And that's because the guy he wanted to hire as his assistant, an artist named Ed, played by?
Alan Rickman.
Thank you.
I didn't realize that was
I was going to go with...
I got to apologize. Louis's got an eye infection and is walking around in a little cone. And so this tiny sad desk lamp walked through the room, tried to turn a corner, got caught cone first on a chair, and just gave up.
Sarah saw a picture of him with the cone this morning.
I was so distracted by that I dropped right out for a moment there. I apologize.
All good. Anyway, so Rickman basically, it's a buddy cop movie where there's one cop and the buddy is an artist who helps solve the case, and he's fantastic in it as he always is, and it's one of those things where I often think to myself, it's like, why wasn't Kevin Kline a bigger deal, and you know what happened there, and I know that this movie got kind of panned at the time. So maybe that's part of it. But it is, it's a great, detective film. It's kind of got a bit of everything, you know, they've got they've got the mystery, and they've got the serial killer that they're chasing after, and there's some comedy in there, and there's a little bit of something for everyone, and so that is Ed in the January Man.
I have not seen that film.
Awesome.
Does he what's his screen time like? Is it very, very minor, or
no, he's
is he the significant sidekick?
Yeah. Yeah, like he's in it quite a bit. Basically, he's the exposition bounce.
Ah.
Because Klein is talking through his stuff, it's always to Ed.
That is very cool. So, it's one I've seen of or know of, but have not seen. So, I'm building my list once again.
After you have seen it, I will tell you what it is that you'll catch what truly makes it unique. But certainly at the time, but I don't want to spoil anything. So your turn, sir.
All right, ping ponging back to me. I'm going straight to Galaxy Quest.
Nice.
1999. By Grabthar's hammer, you shall be avenged.
Indeed.
Alan Rickman playing a very Leonard Nimoy-ish character.
Oh, yeah.
Who is very clearly well-trained actor who feels the weight and the burden of being saddled with a character with a couple of catchphrases who is forever locked into this role. And really kind of gets his own story through the film itself, and to watch him come to terms with the role he plays and what it means to people, and then to actually deliver the line in seriousness.
Yeah.
At the end, it's a powerful scene by the end. And you remember like, oh yeah, Rickman's a damn good actor.
Yeah.
In the middle of playing his wacky, oh, the world is putting this upon me comedy. It's a fun, funny movie, a huge cast.
Yeah.
The things that I mean, you remember the obvious cast members at the time, but you go back years later and realize, oh, that's Justin Long and that's Sam Rockwell. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Those were people at the time that I had no ability to recognize when I saw them. So another great one that holds up to this day, another one that really it's a fun Rickman role. I think it speaks to your point at the beginning of the episode where we were talking about how he liked to play different stuff and he didn't just stick with one genre or one style or one type of movie. And, you know, it was clear that he was just going to have a good time. And just a really goddamn entertaining movie.
Yeah.
He's so much fun in it. So that would be mine is Galaxy Quest.
Very nice. Yeah.
Did not get to see that in theaters. That was one where I believe that was a VHS.
Oh, on. Yeah. Yeah.
And the first time on VHS and then on DVD, because then it got fancy. But that one is still, that's another one you can go back to anytime. It still holds up. So Galaxy Quest would be my second film. And I don't want to brag early on here, but I think my film festival is coming together rather nicely here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. well, my next one, actually, I seem to be going in a chronological order here, and that was not remotely intentional, but nevertheless, my next one is Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Oh, nice.
An early film from Anthony Minghella, who for some reason I used to always mix up with, what was it I mixed him up with?
The guy who did Hellboy?
No, Milos Forman. Just because they both had a couple of big movies out around the same time at one stage, and I conflated the two of them. And but anyway, so this was Anthony Minghella. And the thing is, like, we actually, by the time we see Rickman, he's dead. And so this is essentially a romantic comedy about a guy who's dead and trying to you know, hoping that she won't move on and then realizing it's what she needs, and sort of the look at it as the other side of goodbye, the idea of how he knows he has to let her go but he can't, and so, you know, he and his ghostly friends are kind of haunting the place, and she really needs to move on, and it's heartbreaking at times, absolutely heartbreaking, and his performance in it is just so stunning. And you know, it I'd heard about it, but I finally found it to watch it probably about 10, 15 years ago. And so by then it was kind of like, oh, look how young Rickman looks.
It was one that a lot of people brought up when he died.
Yes.
And it's one I haven't seen. It's on my list. I put it on my list tonight. It was slightly off my top five, but I thought I might get to it. And it was odd to put down something that I haven't seen, because I don't like to do that. But
yep.
I thought if I get deep enough into the bench, I'm gonna call on an early one that I've heard nothing but good things about, and just go on faith based on, you know, the career, the actor, the man.
Yeah, it's a stunning
judgment.
It's a stunning performance, and that's the thing. As I say, like I've got a couple when we get to them that are from pretty mediocre movies, but his performance is just so stellar in it that it elevates at least for every moment that he's on screen.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Is it who's he play against in that?
For some reason in my mind for years I'd been thinking it was Kristin Scott Thomas, but it's not. It's Juliet Stevenson.
Ah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's one I need to see. I hang my head in shame. I've not seen that yet.
I am shame.
So far I'm 0-2 on movies you've named that I've seen. Meanwhile, Captain Popcorn over here has seen both of his mainstream.
And this is why I said I think there'll be a few that aren't. I went on a big Rickman kick. Now, January Man, I saw when it came out. And I was like, is that the guy from Die Hard? But at the time, I didn't really know who he was.
You know, got the original reference point. That's good stuff. I'm going to go. I'm going to keep it even more mainstream here. I'm going same year as Galaxy Quest. Another movie came out, 1999's Dogma, with a friend of the show, Kevin Smith.
Yes, the Metatronic part of the list.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Well, I stole that, didn't I? Well, did you take both those then?
Oh,
you can't double name the beginning of an episode.
Evil. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Where he played the Metatron.
I'm going to let you have this one.
Thanks.
I don't know that this is more mainstream than...
No, it's not. Really. Realized it after I said it, but... He plays the Metatron. This was Kevin Smith's comedy about resolving his Catholic upbringing. And in the middle of it all, Alan Rickman shows up playing the Metatron, the voice of God, who comes down and speaks to all these people as they try to figure out what's happened, where God has gone, he's missing. And there's a couple of angels who've been cast out of heaven who think they found a loophole and are trying to get back in. And that will cause the end of the universe as we know it, because it hinges on the fact that God is infallible, which was a lot of religiosity to throw at some people all at once, but fantastic movie.
But you know, when you get down to it, it's basically like that Star Trek episode where Frasier is stuck in the time loop.
There you go. See, as someone who was, you know, born and raised Anglican, wasn't that far. Anglican was Catholic light, as I understand it. So there's a lot of stuff that kind of overlapped, and it checked a lot of boxes for trying to fit my own upbringing. So I really appreciated this movie. Anyway, back to Rickman's part. On that one, he got the Golden Satellite Award, Best Performance by an Actor, Supporting Role, Comedy, or Musical.
And that is made to be smooth like a Ken doll.
Yes. And Kevin Smith, bless him, told a lot of great stories when Alan passed.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
Put up that great picture of him in the smooth like a Ken doll bodysuit. Funny visual that everybody has. Kevin remembers from that day was the damage that wing set did to his back. and how he battled through it like a trooper, but they really wrecked his back, and for the rest of the movie he was they tried to keep him seated and he tried not to move a lot, and he really had to fight through to deliver that in the end. And it's worth going back at some point and finding the episode where Kevin talked about all this stuff with him. One of my favorite conversations they had was with when he was still in the habit of having all his actors come in and prepare ahead of time. He did like a little boot camp to make sure everybody knew their parts, because he was still coming out of that independent school where I've got X number of days to shoot and X amount of film, and everybody better know their goddamn lines. So he'd rehearse like a play and then they'd shoot it. And so Jay, his buddy, was often had the potential to be one of the weaker links in production and in memorizing lines and stuff, because his background wasn't really heavily theater, obviously. So he'd always start him early, and then he'd bring in other actors and he'd kind of build everybody around him. And so he brought him in, and he said, he said ahead of time that, you know, they had to make sure that this was like a real movie and they didn't screw this up, and that, you know, it's real movie with real actors. It's like, not Affleck. No, not like Affleck, real actors. Well, who we got? We got Alan Rickman. Well, who's he? From Die Hard. Bruce Willis? No, that's Bruce Willis. The other guy, Alan Rickman. Oh, Alan Rickman. Yeah, well, he's British. They like invented acting. And so he shows up for his, he's going to chew the scenery around you. He's going to make you look like a fool. And so he shows up for the first day of rehearsals with Kevin, where it's the one-on-one, where he's just going to work with Jay initially. And he comes in, he's not carrying a script. And he says, where's your script, you idiot? He goes, I don't need it. Memorize it. He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, I memorized all my lines. He goes, no, you didn't. He goes, yeah, try me out. And so he says a line, and Jay says his line back. He goes, I memorized everybody else's lines too. He goes, what are you talking about? And he starts reading Jay's lines, and Jay starts reading everybody else's lines back to him, all from memory. He goes, what the hell are you doing, Rain Man? And he says, well, I didn't want to piss off that Rickman guy.
Exactly.
And every time I see Rickman in anything to this day, all I can hear is Jay's voice, done by Kevin, saying, I don't want to piss off that Rickman guy.
Yep.
Dogma was a funny movie. Yeah. Rickman was really hilarious in it. It was I remember at the time thinking it was a cool get. Like, this was, oh, he's making real movies now with real actors. And that it was awesome to see Rickman. And again, speaking to your original point, that he did whatever he wanted to do. And he came up and he did this movie because it looked fun.
Yeah.
And how cool is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that somebody with his background also did all these other kinds of movies, and that I can watch different genres and different types of films and still enjoy this great actor. So I dig it. And that's why my third pick is Dogma.
Very, very cool. My next pick is from 2008, and it is a little scene movie that was kind of and this kind of goes back to your Star Trek thing. Just before Chris Pine became a big deal for becoming the new Captain Kirk, he did this very small movie about wine and about wine country. And it was, it also featured Bill Pullman, guys like Dennis Farina and Eliza Dushku and others. Anyway, I actually caught this one on a plane, and, it was kind of, it's an easy move, and it is a movie that is wine country, basically. And we had, a few months before come back from a honeymoon where we ended up in wine country. And so it is all about sort of the beginnings of that. And so Rickman plays a guy named Stephen Spurrier, who is a sommelier in Paris. And this took place in 1976. And so he comes to Napa Valley because he wants to find the best thing they've got so that he can take it to Paris and do like a blind, I thought to myself, it's like, this was around the time of the Pepsi Challenge, but to do a blind taste test. And so he finds this guy, and it's basically their whole thing about trying to get it accepted into these grand wine contests, and sort of how California wine, we look at it now as, hey, it's good stuff, but at the time it was really looked down upon, and the French, they were really good at looking down on all of the wines that weren't theirs. And it's just a quiet little movie that has some great performances, and Rickman's is, of course, without peer. So that is Bottle Shock.
And Bottle Shock.
Yes.
Jesus, I'm leaving with homework tonight. Bottle Shock. Rickman and Pine.
Rickman, Pine, Dushku.
That is... All right. Wow. Well, I cannot speak to that at all, but I can say, hey, that is damn cool, and I just added it to the list, both the one here I'm making of this draft and my homework assignment. Wow. Well, I can't believe I'm getting all the ones I wanted to get. This is truly dangerous. I am going with 1991's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Very nice.
Because that movie is chaos, but in the middle of it all is Rickman having the time of his goddamn life.
Why a spoon, cousin?
It's duller you twit, it'll hurt more. So fantastic. Again, it's one of these movies where he's just chewing the scenery and spitting out line after line after line. And that scene where he walks by his own statue and realizes somebody's defaced it, and then he starts trying to rub it off.
Yes, yes.
Undo the graffiti. It's so good. It was great. It was interesting movie because it was also when Morgan Freeman reappeared in my life, because years later I'd come to realize that I had seen him on Electric Company as a kid, but I think that was the movie that kind of put him back in my life too. Huh. So it was neat. I mean, it was chaos. Everybody loves to make fun of Costner's accent that shows up for three lines and disappears for the other 87% of the movie. And bizarre Christian Slater performance in the middle of it. Like it's an odd and quirky little movie, but still one of my favorite versions of the Robin Hood story. And in the middle of it, is Alan Rickman running around being just chaos incarnate, very funny, but also really evil. And I mean, some of the scenes he gets away with in the middle of that are at the height of the film are to cause a laugh due to the physical comedy of the attempted rape of the lead actress is pretty ridiculous. But he does that weird move, and you chuckle in the middle of the movie. You're like, oh, sweet Jesus. Dude just made me laugh.
Well, that ain't right.
I'm going to turn this off and go think about what I've done. But it's a super weird performance. He was nominated from this film. There was a BAFTA.
Yeah.
But he was nominated for the MTV Movie Villain Award that year. And he lost to Rebecca De Mornay for The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. And I don't know. I would never dare to question the selection process used by the MTV Movie Awards. But part of me wants to demand a recount, I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
So Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Was that any chance you saw that in theaters when it came out?
I saw it at the drive-in.
Oh, well, you know, you needed that little Bryan Adams soundtrack in the background while you're there watching with somebody, right?
Yeah. Not my favorite movie, but not by a long shot, but
no,
Rickman was amazing in it.
There's some problems in there, but to your one of your earlier comments was that Rickman's roles often...
That's it. Even in a shitty movie.
Leapt out of bad movies. That was a weird movie, but it came along at just the right time where it's kind of locked in as a no, it's a classic. It's not a classic. You just saw it at a time when you were dumb and thought it was great. We all have those movies.
That's so funny. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm going with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves for my fourth pick.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. I'm gonna skip over that because it's kind of a nothing part. All right. My next one, speaking of movies that are not so great, But again, he really shines in this one. And it is the story of the origins of the New York City punk rock scene and the most importantly, the place that becomes a character of its own, CBGB. And in which Rickman played so far against type as Hilly Crystal, the guy who owned the club, who basically had so much trouble, you know, because it actually CBGB stood for country, bluegrass, and blues, and he was having trouble booking enough country bands in the place. It was down in the Bowery, and so he invited a whole bunch of, like, any other artists in the area. It's like, you guys come on in. And the only demand he had of them was no top 40 stuff, no covers. You only play original music. And so that's what they did. And so that's where you had bands like the Ramones. You had Lou Reed come out of there. You had Blondie. I mean, it was such a diverse scene coming out of CBGB. And some of that stuff gets played a little bit too twee in this movie for my liking. But but Rickman, always great. Who was it that they had? I don't buy Kyle Gallner, you know, Beaver from Veronica Mars, as Lou Reed.
How did that pass the laugh test?
And while I am all for Foo Fighters drummer Taylor Hawkins playing Iggy Pop, I just cannot.
That's a little closer.
Yeah, but Joel David Moore, again, he's a name you're not going to be familiar with, but he was in Avatar. He's playing Joey Ramone. It's dodgy. But they also save themselves. Malin Ackerman is Debbie Harry. So I'm willing to go with that. But
I'd watch.
It's not bad. It's just it just feels very TV movie.
Oh, okay.
Except for Rickman. Right, like that's the part that takes you out and says, "Oh, right, this isn't a shitty TV movie. It's just a shitty movie that has an awesome performance by Rickman," and you know, he kind of brings it together. So there you go, Hilly Crystal, CBGB.
Huh. Well, again, you are keeping the hot streak alive, Hector. I have never looked like more of a mainstream douche than I do currently, and this is my part to step slightly outside into one that maybe folks haven't seen. My last one is from very late in his career. I think it's one of his last movies. It was released the year before he died, called Eye in the Sky.
Oh, fantastic pick.
Yes. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have. And I'm honestly surprised. I was so busy looking down the list earlier because I knew that I wanted to get Truly Madly Deeply. And as I was going through, it was like, oh, and I love this, and I love that, and I love this, and I love that. And I never got as far up as that again.
If you haven't seen it, folks, it's got a great cast. Helen Mirren's in it. Aaron Paul on the... somewhat fresh off of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So Aaron Paul is one of two drone pilots. And then it's a lot of closed rooms. So Aaron Paul and somebody else are sitting in a room and they're flying the drones in a mission over the Middle East, and somewhere else there's a room full of generals who've gathered together or a tactical command that are trying to carry out this mission. And they're linked into a group of generals sitting in a conference room somewhere that with catering, trying to make the ultimate commands about whether or not they do this. And in the middle of it all, they think they've tracked down somebody high up the terrorist watch list to a location, and they're observing and they think they can take them out, but they need to know who else is in the room and who else is there and what's the risk assessment based on what's around them. And the suspense and the tension continues to build through the whole thing. And I was really impressed. I tripped across it one day when it was like a Sunday afternoon, and I was bored, and the Movie Network was on, and it's still part of our cable package. And I thought, eh, why not? And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's on while I'm cleaning. And then 30 minutes in, you've sat down and you were staring at the TV from the edge of your couch. And whatever else you thought you were doing while this was on in the background is now over. And you're going to watch this damn movie. And then you're going to find it when it's on again later that day, tape it, and then watch it again with your wife a week later. And that was what I did in this case. Really great. Late in his career, he plays one of the generals who's in that last mentioned room where he's the higher up making the decisions and the calls and the ones facing the political pressure of what they're trying to carry out as a tactical decision. And anyway, it's great. It's well worth it. Really interesting. Almost plays out like a play.
Yeah. Like it's a movie, but with all the closed room stuff, that makes sense, right?
Like you could see that on a stage with differently lit corners of a room.
Totally.
Or differently lit corners of a stage that they just light based on who's talking. And really interesting, the dynamic of people, issuing orders and directives from offsite locations to one another. It seemed to kind of want to explore the removed means through which acts of war are now carried out. Because the drone's on one side of the world, the guy flying it's on the other side of the world, the person ordering the person to do stuff is in another room in another part of the world, and the person ordering that person around is sitting in another part of the world, and everybody's removed from everybody. And it was really interesting. It's well worth watching.
Yeah, no, it's that's a really great one. I've only seen that one just the one time, but it's one I've wanted to revisit because there is, you're right, like the pacing of it is really, really quite fascinating, and very nice.
Yeah, I mean it builds to points where you're watching and waiting to see whether or not people can clear an area fast enough. You're watching ants walk around, and it's who's going to be there and who isn't going to be there when the magnifying glass with the sunbeam comes down. Like, it's creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a movie that stayed with me afterwards, and that I was thinking about afterwards. So it's nice that I have one on my list that isn't just a disposable. Yeah, Rickman was awesome. It was a very good and interesting movie, and in the middle of it is Alan Rickman near the end of his career, playing a very senior.
His last live action role. Yeah.
Is it his last live action?
Yeah, he did. He was a narrator on something else after this, but that was just voiceover. So this was the last role he did live action.
That's great, because so often the last role is not
a
shining achievement.
Raul Julia's last movie was freaking Street Fighter.
Yes, perfect example. And who was Adam's Family? No, that was
That was Raul Julia. Yeah.
Who was? Oh, there's so many of those.
He was going through a time.
And what's his face? Whose last movie was Welcome to Mooseport?
Yeah, that guy.
Crimson Tide and all those other. Tide. Never mind. This is a dude. Did a bunch of great movies, and then he got new. Gene Hackman?
Oh, yeah.
Hackman's last? Yeah. So.
Well, so it's his last so far. I mean.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's got this whole career, and then he just walks into Mooseport and it tanks, and he's like, you know what? I'm done. And he walks away. And, I mean, that's got to be at least 10 years ago at this point.
Well, that was Sean Connery with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's like, all right, I'm out. This is what it's come to.
The Sean Connery was hilarious because I remember an interview with him at the time where they said they brought me The Matrix and I didn't understand it, so I passed. And they brought me, was it Lord of the Rings? And he said, and I didn't understand it, so I passed. And they brought me League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and I didn't understand it, but I was going to be damned if I was going to pass. It's like, oh, dude.
I'll be damned if I'm going to pass on another one.
Bad Russian roulette with a three shot.
yeah, it's messy.
Yeah. Anyway, so yes, I highly recommend Eye in the Sky.
Very nice. Well, that...
like, bring us on home?
That changes everything.
Oh, did I just take one from you?
No, no, not at all.
Oh, that's right. You said you did. It just changes everything because I finally put one on the board that you're like, oh, I respect.
Oh, come on. You know I love Dogma. You know
you
I love.
You just counted on me to take those. You're like, oh, he's going to get the obvious ones. I'm going to get the ones that make me look cool.
Not remotely. All right. My other one is, and at the time that that I saw this, I had just seen the play as well, and it's Sweeney Todd, which of course I hadn't seen before I saw Jersey Girl, but but it made me want to see it, and and so we saw this. God, this was well, yeah, it was obviously before children. We went to see. In fact, I think Jen was pregnant at the time, and we had tickets for like season tickets for the Royal Alex, and they had a bunch of really cool plays. And one of them was the Sweeney Todd, which was basically a new there had been a new Broadway production of this in 2007, and so this was the touring company of that. And they had like, 12 Angry Men. And so I was on board. Poor Jam was barely able to stay awake for these. But Sweeney Todd, it kept her attention. And so I generally avoid, Tim Burton movies in general.
That's a safe rule.
Yeah. And since 90% of them were with Johnny Depp, I kind of avoid him a lot too. And so together, oh, good Lord.
red flags popping up everywhere.
Oh, my God,
and
yeah.
Yet,
but it was
Jersey
Sweeney,
Girl it, made but it you was, say, I have to see this.
Well, I saw the play, right? So having seen the play, I was kind of satisfied. But, I'm like, great, another Depp Burton wank fest. And then it's like, oh. But Judge Turpin is played by Rickman. Rickman could get me to see things I would never go and see.
That's awesome.
And this was absolutely one of them. And again, it's a movie I can take or leave, but God, he's so good in it. And that's mainly because I'm so over the Tim Burton stylistic choices. And...
Yeah, he was a, he was a thing for a while. Like he was the right quirky weird. I'm an artist, and
yeah,
made some interesting stuff along the way. And then he just became the go-to guy, and he just sort of seemed to revel in his weirdness. And I think people dropped the reins and let him be as weird as he wanted to, and things just got. Awkward.
Yeah, he lost me after Ed Wood basically, and but God, I love Ed Wood.
Yeah, great movie. But, and again, it's another Depp one. Like
well, it is. Yeah, and it's the second one. I think his first with him was Eddie Scissorhands. I know him really well.
Yeah, very close.
But Rickman is staggering in this, and again, it's. He gets to play evil, and he does it so, so well. And it's one of those things where for all its excesses, when he comes in, he has a way of grounding it and elevating it at the same time, which is a real hell of a thing, laws of physics wise. But sure. it's something that Rickman could do. So there we go.
That's great. Right on. And that one was specifically called, was it actually called Sweeney Todd?
Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Oh, they gave it the full name.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Have not seen that. So for the record, I am 0-5 on your list. And I believe you are 5-5 on mine.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's fine. I'm fine with that. My ego can handle that. I am beyond being shaky.
But you know, that said, it's like it's not that long ago that I saw the last one. So
well, that's because it only came out 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I didn't see it then.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Movies have a time. They got a lot of time to marinate with me.
This is true.
All right. So, anything left on your bench?
Well, the next one I was going to, which I think would have been interesting to get to, was I was going to go Quigley Down Under.
Nice. With Tom Selleck. Yes.
That movie.
That was on my bench too. Yeah.
It came along at the weirdest time, and it was just such a strange film. It's, a Midwest cowboy gets hired to go all the way to Australia for a job because he's an excellent marksman, and he gets there only to discover that it's Alan Rickman who wants to hire him because the Aboriginals have learned to stay out of range of their guns, so he needed to bring in a gun who could shoot further, so he's brought him in just to shoot Aboriginals. And the scene then turns where he throws Rickman through the window of his own house, kicks over the dining room table, gets a really good bottle of booze, and settles him behind it with his gun and starts shooting everybody that comes at him.
Yeah.
And it was a movie that I never knew where the hell it was going, which was what made it, I think, so interesting and entertaining. It didn't seem like it had a clear, you know, path, but yeah. Like, oh, okay, oh, he is a bad person. Oh, that's okay. Tom Selleck's going to kick his ass now. It was weird and enjoyable and strange. So Quigley Down Under was on that list. It's one of those ones where it'll show up in the middle of an afternoon and yeah. on TV, and you'll be like, I know it's on TBS. I know it's edited. I'm going to ride this one out.
Nice.
It's strange. Yeah. The others, I mean, I had Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy just because he was a funny voice of the robot. Yeah. Love Actually was on there just because everybody's in that and everybody loves it. But you notice it did not make the top five. It was just one that I wrote down because I thought I was going to be in trouble when you started taking movies from me. I was like, I'm going to have to say Love Actually. You know, the one where he plays a
horrible, horrible person.
Horrible man who cheats on his wife and is a
Emma Thompson
through the whole thing. Yeah, like it's an odd role for him to take. I mean, for him to be the only thing that makes it interesting is that it's watching him be the villain in a romantic comedy is unexpected.
Yeah, and that's probably what drew him to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again, coming back to your whole thing about how he liked to mix it up. So,
yeah.
So you're. What about your bench? What is
some,
what
we, some I had on there?
Tell me more movies that I've never
yeah,
seen.
Yeah, Nobel Son.
Never heard of it.
Where he plays again the villain in on the romantic side of things. You know, he's a philanderer who wins the Nobel Prize for chemistry, and. You know, his son gets kidnapped, and the requested ransom is, of course, the Nobel Prize money, basically. And he refuses to play.
Yes. Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. Yeah. Is it good?
It's okay. He's okay. Fantastic in it. But it also stars, it's got, you know, a bunch of nobodies in it. You know, Ted Danson, Danny DeVito, Eliza Dushku, Bill Pullman, Mary Steenburgen, you know. No,
it's his second Eliza Dushku collaboration,
right? And Bill Pullman as well. Like they share both of those movies. Anyway, it's pretty funny. I for the most part chose the movies where he was a nice guy.
Yes.
Okay. And so so this one he was a bit too villainous for me in it. It's good. It's a good one. And this is a short role, Ronald Reagan in The Butler.
Huh. Wow.
And I just thought of all, because I did not know that he was in it. And
that would be a surprise.
And then it's like they come to Reagan, and it's like, it's Rickman. It kind of surprised me. But then again, this is a movie where you've got John Cusack playing Richard Nixon. So
anything is possible.
Yeah, exactly. And let's see, what else did I have on here? Where am I? There. Got that one. Yeah, no, those are my main ones. Because you hit on a couple of the ones bench-wise that I had as well. and you know, a truly storied career, and just an amazing. And you know, we named the list the Severus Snape. I named the list the Severus Snape Memorial, Metatronic.
I didn't even catch it at the time when you said
it. I know
it.
You didn't.
the Severus Snape, I was like, okay, that helps, because I was going to say, at some point I thought I was going to get cornered and I was going to have to go, Harry Potter, and you were going to go, which one? And I would say, I don't know.
Oh, I wouldn't have said which one, because that's why I said roles instead of movies.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, his performance on that is, you know, there's some bits where it comes off kind of cartoonish, mustache twirly type stuff. Mm-hmm. But the depth he brought to that character was just amazing. And there was stuff.
See, and I've seen the first three movies and I haven't read the books. So I'm still kind of. There's a lot of unexplored ground for me in Harry Potter.
Yeah, I would say hold off on the movies, read the books.
I am the thing that is sitting under my microphone to get it up high enough to my mouth on this desk. is a sleeve case box set of Harry Potter books.
Well, there you have it. There
that
you
we
have
bought
it.
In preparation for my nephew who is turning 8 this summer.
Nice.
And we think that that's just kind of, we're finding the sweet spot where we can sit him down and read the first one together, and then when we finish reading it, then we'll watch the movie.
Yeah, and that's what we did with Ella. We did Jan and I used to, like, when we first got together, we would, if we were going on a road trip somewhere, we would bring mm-hmm. a copy along, and whoever wasn't driving would read it to the other. Mm-hmm. And so we got through the first few books that way, and I think we got all the way up to Order of the Phoenix, and which is the 5th. And we started reading them with Ella, and we did the first couple, and she kind of lost interest. So, she kind of tapped out partway through Order of the Phoenix, because it's the long. It was a pretty long book at the time, and this was when she was maybe 7, so she was definitely too young for it. But now they're doing Lord of the Rings right now. They did The Hobbit. They just they just watched Fellowship of the Ring on Sunday, and so they've started in Two Towers, and so they're going. So they're going through that right now. And I said, well, after that, we got to get her sitting down with Harry Potter, because she'll love it then, you know, because it's a lot of the stuff that she likes. And then it'll be, you know, you finish it, you get to watch the movie. And so we're kind of working toward that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I've got them as audio books.
And that's with Jim Dale doing the reading.
Yeah. And I thought nice. That for some of our trips to the cottage, that would be a good way to do this.
It's perfect.
Is to work our way through it together that way.
Because it's the guy, remember Pushing Daisies, the narrator?
Mm-hmm.
That's the guy who does them, yeah. And his readings are incredible. And it's just fantastic. So yeah, you'll enjoy that for sure.
Right on. Well, it's something we got to get to. It's on the list.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, should we do a little pop of the week here?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Oh.
You start us off?
I am going with, at the risk of drawing everybody's attention to another, some might argue, far superior podcast, I've been listening to a lot of a show called Punch Up the Jam, sorry. And Punch Up the Jam is Miel Bordeaux and Demi... Oh, did you Wigby? I got that wrong. Miel and Demi, and they're comedians and writers and friends, and they do a weekly podcast where they pick a song. They take some popular song that everybody knows, and they basically roast it. They go through it, dissect it line by line. And they go after the lyrics for one thing, but they also hunt down wherever they can the stem tracks. They get isolated vocals and isolated instruments. And so if the drums do something really cool and they want you to hear it, they'll then play the isolated drum track for you. Yes. And if they can't figure out what the person on the fifth harmony is doing, they'll play that isolated vocal. And you get into the hair band stuff where it's just somebody screaming into a microphone and they try to paint you the picture of, okay, it's take 37. Dude's got his headphones on and here he goes, wow. well, no, that really didn't do it. Let's do it again. And it's really funny. And then at the very end, one of them, they both have musical training in their background.
Yeah.
And one of them will have recorded a punched up version of the song, and it'll be a re-edit, or it'll be like they did Jesse's Girl. And one of the things that they really focused on was the fact that he actually says nothing about her through the song or why she's so great, and incidentally doesn't name her. So the whole thing is that it's his buddy's girl and that he wants her, but he can't figure out why, because she's doing all this stuff, but no specific reasons as to why she's so great. And so they did the song focused on that. They took The Nookie by Limp Bizkit.
Oh yeah.
And they did a version of it that is hauntingly beautiful ballad. It's amazing some of the stuff they create and some of the stuff they do. And the punch-ups at the end are actually worth the listen.
Nice.
They just did Celine Dion, That's the Way It Is, and pointed out as part of it that it was the same writer that did I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys. And so at the end, they did Celine Dion singing a mashup of the two songs. And so Miel is singing in an impression of Celine Dion singing a Backstreet Boys Celine Dion mashup. It's nice. The weirdest stuff comes out of these folks, and all their tracks are available on their website, but every episode has been worth it so far. And they get a different guest in each time, and so as they grow in popularity, you start to see names you recognize. And it's really one of those things where you can look at the list and just pull out a song that you love and give it a listen, and it's a great time. It's dominated the last week and a half of my commuting.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, great show, and I think you'll really dig it, because I know you are a musical man.
Oh yeah, yeah. And, well, because really it to me is, you know, a couple of my favorite shows are like Switched On Pop, where this is what they do, is they dissect the songs. But this, you know, with the kind of, you know, kind of mashing that up with How Did This Get Made, sounds awesome.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great analogy. It's like a musical version of How Did This Get Made.
Yeah.
And they're both really funny together. They get a little cutesy off the top sometime. You can tell they've got improv background. But once they get into the meat and potatoes of what they do, they're it's fantastic. It's a show like none other right now, and I really like it.
Very cool.
So that is mine. Punch Up the Jam.
I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. What do you have for us, sir?
Well, now, sorry, I fell down a little rabbit hole for a minute. They're just trying to find the... oh, it's on the Patreon. The songs, their versions of the songs.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, then stick with the podcast.
Well, exactly. well, damn it! I wanted to play us out with that version of Nookie, but it's it is not going to happen. all right, my.
Sorry.
I'm not.
Stop talking. My apologies.
Was that a sample?
We were getting closer.
There you go. All right. It is one of my favorite things each year over the last couple of years has been that week where the new One Day at a Time comes out. And,
oh, yes.
And I find that I start watching them right away. And I try and hold off a little bit because, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. And I got to wait another year. And and so this was the year I was going to spread them out. And so, yeah, that didn't happen. they came out on Friday. And by Sunday, I was all done. And, yeah, and quite enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And now I have to wait another year, if I'm that lucky.
I'm three episodes into season two.
Yeah,
and have realized that there's been a big With the release of season three, everybody's been like, by the way, if you're not watching this, you're stupid. I was like, I was watching it, and I felt smart when I was watching it, and I have to return, clearly. So,
if you're not watching it, you're stupid. Boy, you hang out with some tough crowd.
Oh, yeah, some people like to just lay it out there for me and make sure that I catch up fast.
Another great season, you know. Rita Moreno, you can't go wrong with. Justine yep. Mikado is just amazing in this season, and really the whole cast is on all cylinders. And they also get the actress to come in. Remember in Kevin Nearly Saves the whatchamacallit, mm-hmm. the teacher.
Yep.
His girlfriend, she's in it. She's actually, it turns out in real life, she's married to the guy who plays Schneider. And it was funny because in, you know, thinking she looks familiar and checking who she was, it was like, oh, okay, they're married. And then, oh, wait a second. She was the one that was in Kevin and was in this and was in this. Holy crap. She's been in a whole lot of stuff. And I didn't realize it was her. So, you know, as these things happen, but yeah, again, well written season, and it's interesting because they did a really good job of covering some you know, so they did is it just like, you know, this was what
the original was,
yeah, you know, where they played where they played, you know, they would have something comedic, and but then they would also tackle a tough issue, and so they do some great stuff dealing with you know, some, you know, topics like consent and getting into things like you know, anxiety and you know, that type of thing, and really you know, kind of go through them in really interesting ways of looking at them, and certainly of portraying them, and you know, it's one of those things where you're kind of like, oh yeah, it's a real throwback sitcom, and it's like, yeah, but there's a lot of stuff that isn't throwback about it. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of pushing forward, which is unusual in something that's shot multicam.
Mm-hmm. Initially it seemed like, oh, okay, it's a reboot. And then I was like, oh, okay, so it's a reboot, but they went Cuban. And, okay, well, I don't know what I'm watching anymore. Wait, well, this is new. Well, that's different. Yeah. I mean, it almost feels like if they'd just gone with a different name, if they hadn't presented it as a reboot of a previous series, could they have established themselves sooner? Like, did they end up burdened with it's a reboot initially?
Oh, I don't know. I think that helped them. I think that actually helped them. You know, yeah, because the only, so Divorced Mom with Kids, yep. You know, I mean, how many shows are there like that? A lot.
Yeah.
So that's not exactly, now it was it groundbreaking in 1975? Yeah, it was, because it was like, ooh, divorced. Oh, yeah. No, we can't do that. you know, so aside from the divorced mom, you know, divorced single mom kind of thing, with the landlord who has no boundaries, like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, and you know, that's the, and so there's so much that is different about this one. You know, you do get the neat thing with Mackenzie Phillips showing up from time to time. Yeah. And that sort of thing is kind of a throwback to the original show. But I like the fact that they're really treading their own ground with it, because the idea, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's interesting because the idea of the mom of her mother living with them, that was something they did much later in the original series. And that was mainly because they lost so many other characters.
And like, they're losing daughters.
Well, basically. Yeah. And, And so, you know, but in this, they've done that right up front. And I'm sorry, Nanette Fabre was great in that. But, I mean, it's Rita freaking Moreno.
Yeah.
And every scene she's in, you can see that's why she's an EGOT winner.
Well, and the fact that they've set her up so that she sleeps in the alcove, which means that every time she enters, she gets to throw up at the curtains and walk in. Like, she gets to make an entrance every time. And
it's brilliant.
The fact that they wrote it into the show that way is pretty amazing.
It really is.
Yeah. And that one, they gave her one episode early in the show run where it's just her getting up and running the house in the morning. And so it starts with her throwing open the curtains and dancing through the living room and then making breakfast while dancing and singing to herself. And like it's this one little one woman vignette.
Yeah.
Scene.
Yeah.
That, you know, it was like, oh yeah, this lady's magic.
She really is. She really is. And, the, you know, the whole cast, you know, I think the kids have really kind of come into their own as well. And it was a great season. And the only regret I have is that now I will probably do another run through the all three seasons again. But yeah, is the having to wait because it's like, oh, I went through it too quickly, and mm-hmm. now it's another year. And this year it was longer because the first two it came out in January, and then this year it was like February. What?
They were like, let's make Paul wait.
That's what they, that, oh, I know that's what they did.
Yeah.
All right.
The, I have a similar relationship with The Ranch where every time that new season comes out, I'm like, oh, okay. Now, do I just plow through them? Do I have to spare them? It's like you got that one little bag of Halloween candy. You got to figure out how long you're going to make it last because you got to wait till next year to go back out again. And it's,
Yeah. And I've been watching that. So that's my new sort of go-to Netflix. Let's let stuff run while I'm doing a lot of cooking.
Yes. And it's an interesting thing because it's very much something that's come about with Netflix where it's like, oh, here's a brand new series. We're going to give them to you all at once. You do what you're going to do.
And you know.
It's that thing about like you can't leave the dog's food all at once because the dog will eat all the food and then be sick.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing to us is they're putting all the food down at once and we're not smart enough to take it one at a time like a cat.
And you know, that's another interesting thing is because both of those shows do that thing where they acknowledge that this is not something that you consume in a week to week fashion.
Yeah.
And the way that they reference other episodes is, you know, it's almost as though in their head they're saying, we know you just watched it a half hour ago.
Right.
And I think that those are two shows that are really doing a good job of that, of acknowledging the new format and still, you know, having those elements where they are a throwback to that older style. But they're also pushing forward with new things. And it's a really, really interesting dichotomy there. And I kind of dig it. And I like that they get it.
Yeah.
They're not just trying to say, oh, we're just going to do the same old, and pretend that it's like you're watching it week to week.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, then, let's wrap this up at under an hour and a half.
Yeah, right?
Look at us.
We're trying so hard, folks.
Indeed. And one other thing we're going to try and do, folks, is we've talked about a lot of movies that Scott hasn't seen. And and maybe you haven't either. And maybe you're like, what is this Die the Hard? I don't know this. What is your Robin Prince of Hood Thieves? I don't know this movie. What we're going to try and do is put together a list where where basically everybody wins. You know, you head over to, you kind of click through on our site. We'll provide you a link, take you right to it. Maybe you buy it, maybe you rent it, whatever. But the great thing is that in doing so, and this is in a way that does not cost you a single penny extra, you actually help support the show too. And so we're going to try setting that up. That's a new thing. There will be growing pains.
Stand by to watch us flounder towards success.
But anyway,
I'm still back on Robin, Prince of Hooded Thieves. It's like an uncircumcised vigilante thing.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, I was going with my Ian Levenstein voice there. So, you know, hey, I don't know the kids with their hippie hop, yeah. Well, you know. Anyway, so. Comments, as always, are welcome at popandcrap@gmail.com. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/popandcrap. That's PopNCRAP. Speaking of which, that's also our Twitter handle. We are on the Twitters as Pop and Crap. And in addition to all those things, you can head over to our website, popandcrap.com, where you can leave a comment on this or any episode. Scott?
And spoons may be duller, you twit, and hurt more, but it's no reason for alarm, because at the end of the day, it's all just popping crap.
Oh my fucking god. I came into